The theater, the theater.
Bring out Louis!
Theater, theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater, theater.
Well, hi there.
Hello.
Hi, friends.
What's going on?
Well, Fringe is over, and that's both sad and amazing.
Yes.
It was a gauntlet this year.
It was.
I also bit off a little bit more than I could chew, but I survived.
We all did. Yeah, you bit off more than us, but we all went ham, and it kicked our asses. I heard you saying, Siege, you're getting creaky. Your joints are creaking.
Yeah,
same here.
Before Fringe, I was stretching every night, and I was not stretching during Fringe. I'm just getting old. I got to stretch before I go to bed.
You got to stretch. Same
and
here.
So much drinking, so much crappy food, glorious food, crappy food eating, you know, and just the hours and the time. And, you know, we all worked hard and did stuff, you know.
Worth it.
Yeah.
Well.
It was. And we did three whole episodes on Fringe, and that was good times. And now we're kind of back to what we do best.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Are we all sleepy? We're a little sleepy.
We're a little sleepy.
No, I'm great. I'm here.
We just spent a month not sleeping.
Yeah. Or sleeping a little.
True.
Yeah.
But we got to get pumped for what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's right. No, this is a good one. No, let's get pumped. Okay. One, two, three. Get pumped.
Pumped!
There I wanted is. To just scream, but I figured that would be bad.
Well, just as long as you don't face the mic, it's fine.
Yeah.
Turn around, scream. Let's go. One, two three.
Y'all.
That was it.
Still pretty loud.
Really good about it.
No,
I felt good about it.
Cut it. Please, cut it.
We're leaving it forever.
Nope.
That was a fury yelp of strength.
Fury.
Okay.
Fury.
Let's do it.
Okay, welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm C.J. Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And today is a kind of sad day in a way.
Is it?
It's the end of an era.
It's the end of an era in a very long series, yeah.
That's right. It started two seasons ago. And it's a mini series within a mini series. This is the NBC Live Musicals mini series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it's the Jesus. Well, it's the last of them all, but it's the only NBC one.
No. They're all NBC except for Grease.
Oh, I got it wrong.
Grease is
backwards.
Fox, right?
Nah.
Yeah. So all of them have been NBC. But then I was like, I'm not going to make you do Christmas Story or like any of the like kind of really rough ones.
Right.
But, or Annie. But I am going to make you do Grease. So we did that one last time.
Yeah.
That was Fox, though. And I think that's like maybe one of the better ones of the live TV musicals. However, this was, I don't want to give my hot take too early, but this is probably the best one of the bunch. Yeah?
Yes.
I agree. Yeah, in a number of ways. And we talked to we did a viewing last night. We should tell everybody that we all got together and watched the Jesus Christ Superstar live.
Lucifer's Pizza, non-spawn.
Non-spawn. And really, really broke down a lot of the cool stuff that this one did that others failed at or just didn't do at all.
Right.
Right.
And that was kind of fun.
Yeah, we've already covered Jesus Christ Superstar in a way because we did the movie a long time ago, maybe season two.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I believe you're
like
right.
That. In our movie musical miniseries, I think it was a CJ pick.
Yeah, I love that movie.
I think I did a little re-listen and I was a little harsher on the movie than I think I actually felt. I think I was just trying to debate because I was just like, this is what this podcast is about.
Yeah.
But on re-listen, I was like, I don't know that I actually hate the movie that much. It's just that I like the show so much and the movie is great, but I just don't, I don't think the movie is like the best version of the show, if that makes sense.
Okay.
But I do love the show a lot. And as I've said many, many times, this is Andrew Lloyd Webber's peak.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. that was sort of our thesis when we did our Andrew Lloyd Webber series a few months ago, that it just doesn't get any better than, I mean, this fucking thing slaps.
It slaps.
And the concert itself, what we watched last night, slaps, but I was just reminded of how great the album was how much it's stuck around culturally and all that, obviously, but I think there's a complicated story there, I fucking had a blast. I really did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good times. It was directed by two people, technically, Alex Rudzinski, who also directed Grease Live.
Okay.
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 And then you also have David LeVoe, who was
the theatrical stager.
Oh, correct. Y'all were talking about him last night, right? That he's right. Tony's and shit.
So Alex basically directed all of the cinematography, the choreography of the cameras, which there were over 12, I believe.
Wow.
And they're incredible. And I saw them a couple times. They're using stadium cameras. There's those cameras that hang from the ceiling that someone is up in the booth controlling, and it can get down on someone's level, but then it can go up really quickly to get out of the shot for the next camera. And it looks like it's flying if you don't see the wires. It's really cool. Right. You'll see them when you watch football or basketball or anything like that.
What it was invented for.
Exactly.
Sports coverage.
I've run them many times when I worked for KU basketball. We got one.
It
was awesome. It's really cool.
That's cool.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah.
And they get some amazing shots, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the things you and I, right in the middle, Bailey, or right towards the end, you and I started talking about most of these felt like they were staged and then they brought in a camera crew to kind of figure it out. And this one seemed like it was a real thought through collaboration between the director who's staging the stuff and who's the one who's capturing it on camera. And there were some stunning shots. Some of those overhead shots are great. We'll get into more of the staging and the use of space, which I thought was quite extraordinary.
Absolutely. Yeah, the director, David LeVoe, who did all of the actual theatrical staging and stuff. I mean, his resume is incredible. He has 5 Tony Awards you know, directed like a lot of original Neil LaButes. And he won Best Director in 1984 for the Eugene O'Neill revival of Moon for the Misbegotten.
Oh, right.
He's that dude. He does a lot of Stoppard. I think he might have done the original. No, it would have been the revival of 9, which CJ loves.
Yeah.
I believe he did the 2017 Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead at the National Theater Live that everybody loves, National Theater. And then he's just like a Royal Shakespeare director. He's all over the place there. I think he directs more there than most places. Yeah. He rules. And this was a hot take on this. I loved it. I really, really enjoyed it.
Right. I did too. This is the only one we've watched that I'd actually seen before.
Oh yeah. We had watched it a while back when it was first on. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. For Easter.
Yeah.
It came out on Easter and I liked it, but there were things about it that didn't bother me as much this time around.
Yeah, yeah. Because your initial reaction is always going to be a compare and contrast
thing I liked originally.
Right,
like,
right.
I admit there's a lot of that in my take on this, too. So.
Sure, sure. But they pulled it off. Like, as somebody who'd seen it a lot and seen the movie several times, and seen several productions, it's not always my cup of tea because of my complicated relationship with Jesus and religion in general. But I had a really great time. I thought everybody was amazing. I thought the chorus was amazing. The dancers were amazing. And then we'll do a walkthrough of all of our leads here in a moment. But I really had a fucking great time. I thought it kicked ass.
Agreed.
I think the biggest... CJ, you're talking about the difference between the thing you love most, which I think is the movie version, not necessarily like the show, but the movie version
the movie
of the show.
Specifically, yeah.
The Ted Neely, the Carl Anderson, the directing of it all. Right. And though this is obviously a completely different take in terms of the concept that they're going with, right? The conceptualization of the show, which you can kind of do anything with.
Yeah.
That's the best part about Jesus Christ Superstar is that you can sort of place it anytime, anywhere, and it's still, you can still tell this story. And I think this one has less to say in terms of its concept than the film, where the film is very, like, I mean...
Well, and it gets super political at the end.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like it's very political. It's very symbolic heavy, symbol heavy. It's metaphor heavy. There's a lot of it's of the time. It's very of the time. Whereas this one feels a little bit more like a look and a feel and
it's,
a vibe.
It's true.
It's great. I also love, there were moments that I felt, one in particular, the Simon Zealot song, which I still wasn't sold on that guy the second time around, the guy that plays Simon.
Sure.
But they are paying homage to the movie in the choreography. Like, I noticed that it was, some of the choreography was similar, not similar. It's it. That's what I like about it. It was an homage to the choreography with a fresh twist on it, too.
Yeah, and a little taste on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, what impressed me the most about it this time, and I think is the key to the show, or at least the a key to the show, because you can say a lot, and that was the intimacy and the focus on of Jesus and Judas, like that the simplicity of that, and we talked about that
well, and
too.
Mary.
And Mary, too.
They're doing a lot of great close-up work with the two of them when it's just the two of them on stage.
Yeah, just
stuff,
like just connecting. But we talked about it last night, too, Bailey. It was the sort of revelation of one of the great accomplishments of the show is that it never, we never get into the disciples. We never get like all those secondary, any kind of secondary stories. We know who they are. They function as they function. And we focus like a laser beam on those relationships. And I think that that's what made it powerful for me this time in watching it, that intimacy.
Yeah. And the other side, I mean, you know, they're filming these really beautiful tight shots, the direction of that, the choreography of that rules. They're doing so much cool shit, but this is the first time I've seen the show where I kind of fully understand every moment and every intention of the story. Whereas in the movie, because of the way it's shot, it's a little far from their faces. It's a little more like stylized. The every time you see it on stage, it's on stage. So, you know, there's that sort of distance, no matter if it's a community theater in a 99 seat, there's still that bit of distance. Here, there is that intimacy I've never really gotten to see, where I got to fall in love with Jesus a little bit more than I think I would in a normal production. I got to see his... Now, John Legend didn't get great reviews. I mean, he got mixed reviews. People were like, meh. I think he's doing some really great stillness work. You brought that up, Scott. Like, he's just... Yeah. He's doing... He's not always going for, like, emoting until he does. And Judas does the same in all of them. And same with Sarah Bareilles. And I remembered it being good. I was even more impressed last night, really watching the acting, because I had remembered it not being good acting. I was wrong. I don't think that's true. I also remember there being more flubs in the songs, like in the singing.
I thought it was real pretty.
So much as it. Yeah, I mean, you brought it up, Bailey. I want to make sure I give you credit for this. You have a soul singer like John Legend who's singing music that is very specifically written for 70s rock voices type of things.
It's written for a Ted Neely voice, period.
Like, but it's great. Yeah. Like, he's got such a great voice. I liked him as an artist before I ever saw this for years. You know, he's amazing. He's an amazing singer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did re-listen to, there's this one moment, and he does belt it. You were correct, CJ. There's a moment where Ted Neely belts, "When I'm gone," you know what I'm talking about, at the end of Try Not to Get Worried, or amidst it. And the way that Legend does it is a little bit more placed, technical, sort of, you know, in his head voice, in his falsetto, like really just making sure it's a beautiful pitched note. I re-listened to Ted Neely, and the reason I thought it was falsetto, or at least a mix, is because he has to throw it so in his nose to belt it.
Yeah, it's nasal masking.
It's like, and you're like, whoa. And I think that's why I maybe, I don't know, prefer is a bad word, because that's not what I mean. But I do think it's nicer on the ear when John Legend does his falsettos and things than when I watch the Arena Rock Tour, which I want to bring up.
Yeah.
There is a live Arena Rock Tour version of this, and it has Mel B, and I'm actually going to look it up because I don't remember.
Mel B is Mary.
Jesus Christ Superstar Arena Tour.
Oh my God. It is.
Tim Minchin, okay?
Who?
Here we go. Tim Minchin.
Tim Minchin, okay.
The name sounds Judas. Kind of familiar.
Yes.
Oh, Judas. You said the Judas was bad or the Jesus?
Well, they're all bad.
Oh.
And I'm sorry, I was wrong. It's not Mel B, it's Mel C.
Oh, Sporty Spice, Sporty. Which was my favorite.
Yeah, she does okay. She's maybe the better part.
Really?
Yeah, so this guy you would know from maybe like the Matilda movie he wrote. Tim Minchin wrote Matilda, the musical, and the. Anyone?
Okay.
Remember Matilda?
Okay. Yeah, is he in it?
I don't think he's in it. I think he just wrote it.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe he's great. Let me see what he's been in. Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway, as Busker K. Bushy, Esquire.
Okay.
Robin Hood as Friar Tuck, the 2018 Robin Hood. He is Jesus on Californication.
I've never watched that show.
Pretty dope.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, if you saw his face, you might be like, okay, I know him. But so it's Tim Minchin. Mel C, who plays Mary, it's Chris Moyles as King Herod, CJ, just so you're aware.
Okay.
And then Ben Forster plays Jesus Christ.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't.
He's in the Rocky Horror Show Live that they did. I'm pretty sure he was Riff Raff.
Okay.
But he's, or he might have been Brad. I can't remember. No, he's Brad. Sorry, he was Brad. But he's bad. I don't know how to say that.
And who does he play?
Jesus.
He is Jesus. And he does it in a full, like, he must be a rock something, sure. Another, whatever. Sure. And he's absolute garbage. And that's mean. We talk a lot of shit on this podcast. But I was told recently that Casper loves it. So I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, no.
If Casper loves it, then I love it.
Yes.
But if you watch the Arena Rock Tour, it's just such an... It's meant to be like an arena tour, like blow you out of the water kind of thing. And it's just hard to watch. And it's like really high, insane pitched rock vocals.
I've got a buddy of mine, Dave Jolly, who I've mentioned on here before, who is a Jesus Christ Superstar fan, who's like, I'm done. I won't ever see it again. I won't go see it again. Like, it would have to be totally reinvented because it's so easy for it to be shitty.
Sure.
Because you're putting a lot of weight really on two people and then kind of on a third to carry the whole fucking thing. They don't have many breaks. So, you know, and for all the community theater productions and church productions of this that have been done over the years, the how hard it is to do and how hard it is to sound good doing it, because you know, you can easily fall into cheesy musical shit, and it needs to rock and it needs to kick ass a little bit, you know. So what I loved last night is like that band, you know, the band there were three fucking guitar players alone, you know, and then never mind the strings and the drums and all. I mean, it was fantastic, like how that, well, I mean, it just had so much energy. And like, all of those chorus people were so fucking good. All
it
of
looked
them...
like a show that would have been super fun to be in the ensemble.
Oh, my God, right? Like, there was a lot of getting laid in that ensemble. I guarantee. Guarantee it.
They were sexy. Real quick, the costumes we should mention.
Yeah.
Were
yeah.
absolutely phenomenal. And I don't have it in front of
Paul
me.
Paul Tazewell. I looked it up.
Absolutely incredible. Those jackets that the... what's them called? The Pharisees wear is... those are amazing.
I looked up, he also did The Wiz, and he did Hamilton costumes.
Oh, okay. No, that shit. Okay, yeah. Well, there you go.
Makes sense. I mean, NBC, really, the whole thing, right, is they're like, okay, we're bringing Broadway to the masses. That's what we want. So they're trying to get these Broadway people in there, which is great, and I do appreciate it. But this is the first time, and we said this kind of on the Hairspray and the Grease one, like, none of them really capture the beauty and artistry of theater or TV or film, right? Like, this one kind of does.
Yes.
Like, the way that it's shot, really, there were, like you said, Scott, there were multiple times where we'd look at each other like, damn, that looked good. Look at that shot.
Yeah, it was...
They're throwing glitter at each other. This looks stupid. And then there's one shot where it pays off and you're like, whoa, that looked awesome.
Right.
You know? And it's like, that kind of stuff is really smart. But then the artistry of the way it's shot, we'll talk about the final moment later because I was like kind of
dumbfounding. Yeah,
yeah, it was incredible.
So gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I don't give a fuck about any of the stories. I'm just like, this is, wow, this is destroying me. Let's do a step through of the cast. How do y'all feel about that? Okay. I want to start with Sarah. I want to start with Sarah Bareilles, Mary Magdalene, Pam Quinn's favorite person on the planet.
I thought she was fucking great.
She was great.
She's incredible.
That was really good, solid casting in every possible way. That wasn't, you know, I mean, they were probably demographically trying to grab some Broadway folks' attention, but it was just, she was just lovely and in it and... Yeah, great voice. Fuck, yeah. Pass. Hard pass. Super pass.
Yeah. She did a great job. Okay. You agree, Siege? She's a
passive. Yeah. She was lovely. Super pass. She was great.
She also wrote Waitress.
That's correct. Yeah. Do we think that Mary is underwritten in this?
Oh, yeah.
I mean... Yeah,
she's got two great songs, though.
She's got she's got her moments. She's got her songs, and like in general, no one is really like it's an opera,
right?
I mean, I guess she could have more to play because a lot of her is just being like talking about Jesus or telling him how she's going to serve him. But that's sort of how everyone is treating him, besides Judas and the Pharisees, right? So
I think that could be. Fleshed out in different ways depending on your performer or director. There's things you could put in the existing material already that doesn't necessarily make her seem like a supplicant the whole time.
I mean she also kind of represents all of the people. She's like all of the masses and the apostles and
except she doesn't turn her back on him in the end.
Right
okay,
what about Pontius Ben Daniels as Pontius Pilate?
Man, I thought he was solid as shit. Yeah. Handsome dude. Like, and I think he had worked with the director before. I think they had a history, so I think that's how he got cast.
Yeah.
And I think most people recognize him because he's just been working so much. But, man, talk about just getting a fucking pro and just putting a pro and letting that person... do their fucking job and do it really well. And he plays the conflict so much. He plays the anger so much, the confusion so well. Like, I thought he did great. Good voice, solid voice.
Yeah. I really like him in Rogue One.
Really great in Rogue One.
And he's like one of the main priests in the Exorcist TV series they tried to do for a couple seasons.
Right. Yeah.
And then he's in The Crown. And
I know him from The Crown and...
House of Cards.
Yep,
House of Cards. Yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
A lot of TV. He was great. He had one note towards the end that he didn't, hit, but...
It's Pontius Pilate's last screaming, like, couple bars.
Correct. But the way... Dun, dun,
He just started screaming. He
just screlted, and I was like, honestly, the amount that he was emoting, it worked.
It worked. Like he nailed the moment as an actor. And sometimes you can have a cracked voice, and that happens.
Exactly. He's on House of Cards, right? We said that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And then let's talk about someone you brought up, CJ, Eric Grunewald, from who played Simon Zelotes.
Mm-hmm.
Zelotes.
Yeah.
Zelotes.
He was like the first winner of Swedish Idol or something.
Right, yeah,
yeah, that's what you looked up. Something crazy like that, right?
I don't know, man. I thought he fucking rocked. I think he did what he had to do. I in comparison to the movie or other versions I've seen or heard, like, his energy, again, the energy of all of these motherfuckers was off the charts, and he's just thrashing, and he got a cool voice. It's, you know, it's rock, but it's clearly trained and supported and all that, and I thought he fucking kicked ass.
I didn't like him still. He wasn't the same as good old Larry Marshall from the other movie. He was just a dude up there headbanging. He didn't look like he was like getting filled with the spirit and going crazy like Larry Marshall.
He did for me, but fair enough.
That's fine. But this one I loved this one too. This was one of them that the choreography had a hint of the movie, and it was great.
Yeah, I mean, I think the take, right, is like, what if he is just a, that's his, the spirit taking him over is like him becoming this like psycho punk rocker all of a sudden. And I think that was interesting, but he was also that the whole show. From the beginning, he was the one that my eye kept getting drawn to because he would be bouncing up and down and his hair would be bouncing up and down. And then when it got to him, I said it, I think, twice. They just needed to turn his mic up. I couldn't hear him.
Oh, yeah.
He just sounded like he was going... That
was the only kind of techie glitch that I noticed. And you'd pointed that out while we were watching. It was like, yeah, he was turned down just a tad too much.
And he kept touching his earpiece. So I wonder if even he couldn't hear himself and there was something going on there. But even so, that's not the point here. I thought the take was interesting. Yeah. I don't know that, like, with the emotional stakes of the rest of the show, that it fit, but I think it was a cool moment. Like I wasn't taken out of it. I don't remember that moment so much from the movie. I don't know why. But I think I can't compare it. I don't know. I don't remember. But it's a pass for me. Fail for Siege.
Yeah, I'll give him a pass.
I'll give him a soft pass.
He's fine. I don't like hate his guts. I just like the original better. That's what it is.
Wow.
I'm precious.
Wow. I like Philip Seymour Hoffman better as Judas in Along Came Polly than all
you
of
know
these
what?
People.
You're so. Allowed to feel that way.
You're allowed to feel that way.
You're allowed that opinion.
Okay. What about Jin Ha as... Is it Anas? Anas?
I only know Caiaphas. I don't know that guy's name. He's
it's the one that sings
the high one,
the high stuff, which
high
I always love.
Man, I thought he was badass.
Yeah, he was great.
Like what a great fucking look.
Yeah,
like,
he's on the show Devs.
Mm. Oh,
which is
great,
and he's on Pachinko, but I've never watched Pachinko. But yeah,
okay, right on. Yeah. Yes, yeah, he's a cool dude. Great. Keep an eye on that dude. He's gonna be around for a while.
Absolutely. Pass for me. Norm Lewis as Caiaphas.
He was fine. The part was too low for him. That's all.
Yeah, especially at the beginning.
When he had to hit his low stuff. But I looked him up because I was curious about him. I didn't realize he did, in the first cast recording of A New Brain, the guy that was playing Roger in the original cast like lost his voice badly. And so he stepped in and he is the voice of Roger on A New Brain's original cast recording.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Interesting. Yeah.
He sings I'd Rather Be Sailing, Bailey. You know.
That's the best song on the show.
Yeah, he's Norm Lewis. He's fucking great. You know, he looked badass in it. But yeah, you could just hear him struggling to get that.
And he's in Soldier Play at CTG right now.
Yeah, he's right.
Oh!
Right. Yeah.
He's
That's why
leads,
his face looked familiar.
Yeah.
All up and down Olympic.
No, Norm was great. Yeah. We love Norm Lewis. But I think... Well, we can get into that some other time. I think there's something about, like, that Caiaphas and Jesus, and vaguely Judas, but not as much, that is sort of written to be too high and too low for, like, a normal person to ever sing. Like, that's kind of the point, right? Is,
the
like, these insane things. So I do wonder, when they're considering these castings, if they're like, oh, and that's too low, so just, like, cast a good actor. Who can just go, burr, burr, burr,
yeah.
But, because you're right, I mean, he didn't sound great low, but he also, it's not like he was like sharp. You know, like he was kind of hitting the note. Like I was like, sure.
It's just when it gets to the lower part of your range, it's hard to hear. That's all.
They should. Well, that's the the other part. That's what I was about to say. Is like maybe if they had just cranked them a little bit, and we could have just heard those like rumbles, I would have been maybe more into it.
Yeah.
But I agree. It's just not. I don't know. It's a toughie. It's a toughie. Just because he got a little part. Jason Tam is Peter. Peter has a nice voice.
Yes.
I thought he had a nice voice. He only gets that little like moment, but cute.
Towards the end there.
He sings with Mary.
Mary.
Okay. Let's get into some heavy hitters. Here we go. King Herod. Alice Cooper. Bim, 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 bim.
CJ, go ahead and then I will give my super hot take.
Whoa. I got why the way he played it was correct for him. I get it. And I know he had a lot of money staked in this and said, I'm playing King Herod. Fine. I didn't care and I didn't like him. And I love that dumb fucking song. It's your last moment to have fun before. Well, I guess the ending song is kind of fun, but it's the last fun thing that happens before they beat up Jesus and hang him on the cross. Like,
plot. Wise, what is the purpose of this song? Because if you delete it, does it change anything? I guess is my question.
No, it's just the part of the story is that everyone's turning to the person that's in charge. Like Pontius Pilate had to turn to the king for this. That's it's a major plot point in the myth of Jesus. So it's part this. It's
so
part
what does he say in this song? What is the like?
He's saying, prove to me that you're God. Do something incredible. Do some of the shit that people are talking about. And he didn't. And so he said, this guy's a fraud. Get him the fuck out of here.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I think it's funny when it's Alice Cooper and he did kind of talk the beginning of it, right?
Yes.
And then starts to sing it. And it's like, he's like sort of singing. He's kind of Christopher Walkening it. You're like, okay. But like you said, Siege, like it's a stunt cast on purpose. A lot of people... He's especially for the time, the 70s. I mean, like, he was the dude, you know? So I think it's partly that. It's like a callback to that. Like, who's the 70s rock star we can get who people would still know because he went into the 80s and 90s? You know, like, who's somebody we could pull? And we've talked about it already, so we don't have to get into it unless we wanna. Oh. But I don't love the performance in the movie.
Right.
I still don't think I've ever seen this performance, this song done in a way where I'm like, ha-ha, the King Herod part.
That's my take. My take is that it's never been done well.
I just need to see it done
well. I've never seen it done well.
Let's get Jack Black in there.
You know, Jackie Black. I mean, and that's the other thing is that you start going down the names like, okay, well, what's he going to do that's different from Nepo Baby in the movie?
Maybe he'll be funny. Maybe Jack will be funny.
Maybe.
Alice wasn't like, funny. He was like trying to play the comedy, but you're just like, it's Alice Cooper being Alice Cooper.
Somebody like a Josh Gad might be able to come up with something. I don't know.
The guy who plays Potiphar and Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat with Donny Osmond, he'd be good.
But it's like, it's an odd, the moment is right, like dramatically and dramaturgically, you need that moment, you need Herod to show up, you need to have the scene. And I dig the song, but I don't know if it's the big flaw of the show for me. It doesn't quite work at all. And I don't know what to feel when it's done. Like I kind of felt that Alice Cooper was taunting him and that was kind of an interesting take on it. I don't know.
Here's a bit of trivia. Trivia.
Let's hear it.
Trivia.
Alice Cooper was King Herod on the cast recording of the 1997 London revival of Jesus Christ Superstar.
No shit.
And that was them sort of being like, this was his only time playing it on stage, but that was sort of also like the reference. It was like a weird Easter egg of like,
I had no idea.
He's the one from the revival, remember? Remember? and we're all like, no.
No, nobody
we don't.
Remembers.
Okay, and that's fun.
Yeah, and then just... because we're talking about him, when Alice Cooper arrives on stage as Herod, all of the extras were bowing for him, which is a reference to Wayne's World, the We're Not Worthy gesture, which then gets referenced in the movie Hercules, which then is referenced then again here in the 2018 Jesus Christ Superstar line.
Yeah. Okay.
This is the shit that I podcast for. This is why I love this shit. Pretty funny. Okay. What else?
Well, we got to talk about our top two. Well,
yeah, of course. But let me throw this out there because we're getting to them with their Emmy wins for the concert, because this won some Emmys.
Right.
A.L. Dubs, Drew Lo Dubs, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Tim Rice, and John Legend all achieved their EGOTs with this performance.
No way.
On the same night.
What did John Legend win a Tony for?
Let's find the fuck out. Keep talking.
Yeah.
Talk about John Legend.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, we mentioned his performance and that he got some mixed reviews because of it. But I thought, again, going back to
produced
that,
Jitney.
Oh, no shit.
That's cool.
That's fucking radical.
There we go.
Go ahead.
Boom. Yep. No, that's great. Thank you for looking that up.
And then won for Best Original Song for Selma because he wrote Glory.
Yes.
Glory with Common. Right. Yeah.
I thought that his stillness, there's a few moments there where he is laser. His eyes are lasers into Judas's, and he's playing a Messiah. He's playing Jesus. I don't know how much emoting you can do, except when you do it. And when he hit those moments I thought he was great. I really did.
Yeah, I thought he was great. It reminded me a little bit of Boys to Men doing Beauty School Dropout, where it's this song that I'm giggling because they're doing Boys to Men stuff. And I had that listening to him sing these songs that I know so well in completely different voices, but him throwing his own spin on it. And I loved it. He's such a good singer. He's so good. His voice is like butter.
Like butter.
And then, of course, you have Brandon Victor Dixon, who plays Judas.
He's MVP.
Ooh, yeah.
I think that's why I saved him for last. I do. Yeah, I think he's the MVP. I saw him first in Never mind. That's not him. I was thinking... Okay. Never mind.
Saw that he also plays Collins in The Rent that came out. Did it come out after or before Jesus Christ Superstar?
No, it was after. It was 2019. I think that was maybe Fox. It might have been NBC, but that one was really bad, and they didn't end up actually... it is Fox. They didn't end up actually showing it. They showed the recording from the night before because someone hurt themselves. I think it might have been Angel.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Played by Valentina. Anyway.
No, we talked about just the marathon performance that it is to do it live as opposed to being able to record the album and shoot the movie and all that. And he's just, he's ripped. He's clearly an athlete and in shape. But, I just thought he was just a really stunning sort of electrifying performance, like where my eye always was looking for him and what he was doing. And they do some great shots where he's just standing in the distance watching and all that they capture really, really well with all that camera work.
He was Harpo in The Color Purple.
Yeah.
He's musical.
A musical theater man.
Big dude. He did Motown in 2013 on Broadway. He did he was Aaron Burr for a while. And Hamilton and a bunch of other shit. The Scottsboro Boys.
Oh, wow.
Nominated for 2014 Laurence Olivier Award for Best Actor in a Leading Role in a Musical.
No big deal.
And then he also produced Hedwig and the Angry Inch that came in 2014 with Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, cool.
Oh, right.
And which is one of my favorite musicals of all time. And then he also did the Of Mice and Men that same year. And then Hedwig won the Tony Award and the Drama Desk for Best Revival of a Musical. So he's got, I mean, he's got Tonys.
Right, he got Tonys.
Yeah, he's
great. Got he Tonys.
Great. He's got Tonys.
And then he won a Primetime Emmy nom. Excuse me, I said that weird. He did not win a Primetime Emmy. He received a Primetime Emmy nomination, as did John Legend. But none of them won. They did win for Best Outstanding Variety Show or show. Yeah, concert or variety show. So that was dope. He's been doing stuff all over the place. He was Simba in the national tour of The Lion King for a long time. He's one of the dudes. You probably saw him at some point. But what I loved the most, and you kind of said this, guy, but like from the beginning, he had so much control emotionally and vocally. But Heaven on Their Minds, the reason why we love that Carl Anderson version of it, and why I think it's the best song in the show, besides the rip,
yes,
which rules, he's giving everything. Carl is going full vocals, full disco, full rock, full...
Right.
Just like everything he's got. And he's introducing us to the vibe of that movie and to where he's coming from very quickly. Mm-hmm. Right. And I love that. And you're zooming in from the mountain and it zooms in like 19 times. And you're like, okay, yeah, fuck yeah. Who is this guy? And then he sings the beginning a little bit chill, but then he hits Jesus. And then for the rest of the time, he's just going. Brandon, like, never, the whole song never really got to a place bigger than just standing still and hitting the notes perfectly.
Right.
Yeah.
And right. just staring at Jesus. And then they did a lot of it as if he was speaking directly to him. Like, listen, Jesus, I don't like what I see. You know, like that kind of, and I think that as a take is so interesting and so much more powerful for this medium.
Yeah.
Because I think if he had been Carl Anderson from the beginning, not only would he have fried his vocals by the end, but it just wouldn't have been as powerful. And I really loved the control on all fronts, from directors, performers, choreographers. Like, it was tight, it was smart, but also raw.
Mm-hmm.
And felt like it was the first time they had ever done it, but at the same time, like, so precise. So
yeah, and just using, I just wanted to mention the space, because they did it like on like a, it was like a dock or something.
It's the Marcy Armory in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
That's it.
Yeah,
and you know they you know used the audience in an L shape, and then had you know a stage that came out against one side of the set, and then scaffolding, so it was incredibly high. 1,500 people were in the audience. Like, that's a huge audience.
Yeah, that's rad.
And then,
however,
just, yeah,
go ahead.
No, just the use of that space in length and depth and height and the power that it achieved and the beauty, how beautiful it was.
Yeah, like, the scaffolding with all the lights coming through it.
Right.
Yeah. So well designed, really smart lighting design and concept. We should talk about the ending in a moment, that back wall, the mosaic wall. But first, you said there were a lot of people there, and I think this was the biggest audience they had for any of these live musicals, because we talked about the Grease audience being kind of cheesy and bad, but there being a lot of them in different rooms and whatever. Yeah. This one they all got to experience the same show, whereas in Grease and Hairspray, it felt like they were kind of spread out in different sound stages, right?
Yeah.
And so you got the live feel of the audience better this time than in any of the rest of them. However, the least amount of people watched this one the night that it aired. The next one above it was The Wiz at 11.4 million viewers. This one only got like 9.1.
It's because they did it on a holiday. And yes, it was
Easter.
It was Easter Sunday. And that's a very big family time. And people are watching.
And I think
TV.
They expected people to be like, well, let's do family time by watching this religious thing. And I think they actually probably lost viewers because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the religious side of it. I think people were like, it feels blasphemous to watch a musical about Jesus on Easter. I think they lost a lot of their sort of more like Southern audiences,
probably,
if you want the truth.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
also make I'll say it out loud, Black Man as Jesus probably didn't score big with the Southern white Baptists either.
It's probably true, but you know, there were, we pointed out a few times last night while watching it, like the profundity, to use your word, Scott, the how profound it was for some of those lines to be said, and then to see him being whipped the way he was, and them doing it sort of in a more theatrical way where they're throwing the blood at him, right, yeah, as they pass by, and you can't really tell what they're doing. You're like, are they just jumping past him? What's going on? But then you realize, like, oh, they've been throwing this blood at him. It was profound. I mean, it was provocative, right? Yeah. I mean,
absolutely.
It is anyway, but then to cast John Legend and have a sort of crew of white people standing behind a Pontius standing behind him watching it happen, you know. I mean, it was smart. It was good. To me, this is the most artistry we've seen out of any of these. It makes me sad that we're done talking about them, because it's sort of like I wish they grew from here, but instead they kind of just died. They, you know, there's Annie was bad. It was a lot of stunt casting and felt like it wasn't rehearsed. Just all of them. The Grinch one is fucking garbage. Let's
stop
talk about the ending.
Stop making Grinch films, everyone.
Stop making Grinch films.
Stop, yes.
We just don't need it. We
don't.
Okay. The ending of the film, of the concert.
Yep.
Yeah.
They actually hoist him up on the pretty massive cross,
yes,
John Legend. And he's strapped in, and you can kind of see the wires behind him and stuff, but, like, there's nothing on the front of him. It's not like he's in a harness or anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his arms out, and it's maybe like 20 feet in the air, like tall.
At least.
Oh, yeah.
And then they lift it up into the air.
Yes.
And he's got to be 50 to 100 feet in the air. I mean, he's so high up.
Right.
And then they lift him up, it's so cool. As they're raising him up, the back wall that is these beautiful mosaics that at the beginning they were kind of in their graffitied and stuff, they were kind of focusing in on, right? And we didn't really see it the rest of the show. But then it breaks open in four quadrants and creates a giant space of cross, a cross space.
Yes.
And a giant light comes from behind it. And so what you pointed out, Scott, is what the audience would have been seeing is the shadow, the silhouette.
Well, the long side of the audience.
Right,
the short side audience would have been getting the cross
seeing
directly
silhouette
at them and
seeing
the silhouette.
Cross.
Yeah.
But then
yeah,
the long side of the audience, correct, which is most of the audience, would be just seeing the shadow that that's happening. And so we're getting 10 different views because they've got all these cameras and stuff. And it was, you know, I don't think any of us are very religious people. I'm a mildly spiritual person. It has little to do with any text or anything like that. But I think my spirituality comes a lot in art, right? And I think this is a bit of the epitome. That was hard. I'm not going to say that way. It was the epitome to me of why we do this. Like, why are we still doing this show?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and here's a good reason to keep doing this show, you know, like, because I think some people would, like CJ, say, well, the movie's perfect, why would you do it again? And I think that's a good take, actually. But then you see things like this and you're like, okay, well, I guess this is why we do it again, you know?
Well,
I don't have a problem with people doing Jesus Christ Superstar again. It's more the Sound of Music one that I'm like, why would you do that?
No, agreed. But I just mean, I think there are people who have that take with certain things where they're just like, well, why even try to get like Sound of Music? Exactly. I feel the same way. Like, why do it again? And also, why do it with someone who's just so profoundly different? But it worked here.
Yes, absolutely.
It didn't work there. Except Scott loves Carrie Underwood in that part.
I wasn't even going to do it.
But it's a good joke.
But no, I think that there's also different types of shows. Listen to me carefully, because I don't want to offend. I'm not trying to offend.
Offended.
I don't think that Sound of Music is an exceptionally great musical. I think it's an exceptionally great film. Does that make sense? So redoing it again doesn't make sense. Jesus Christ Superstar, although the movie is great, there's something else about it. There's another layer to it that allows for interpretation. You can't do too much with Sound of Music in terms of reinterpreting it.
Right.
It's like you can't put it on the moon.
What's on the page, yeah.
What if we did it, though, like where everyone's a goth?
Who are the goths though? The Von Trapps?
The Von Trapps.
Okay, here's I'll go one step further.
The Von Trapps are vampires. Yes. Yes.
The Nazis are Van Helsing and they're vampire hunters.
Okay, fine.
No, that's offensive. But I will say this. I agree with you mildly that Sound of Music, especially now, you know, we can sort of look at that is one of the great films and one of the great film performances by Julie Andrews, right? Which is why the bit about Carrie Underwood being good is hilarious because she's not. But
it's not that she's good, it's that she's more appropriately cast.
I hate you. It's fine.
Enough.
We quit.
But yeah, some things, it's like, you know how many endless talks there have been about remaking Casablanca? There's just nothing to do. There's nothing you can extract from what's already been done.
Right.
But with JC Superstar, you can, you know, I think that's the testament. I mean, that's why we keep talking about Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Because it's just been endlessly, you know, interpretable.
I think now that we're done with this miniseries, I think I'm going to find another thing that has a lot of variations that we can cover.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I don't know what it's going to be yet. I'm going to think about it.
Not nonsense.
Oh. Should I make them watch every single nonsense?
No,
there's like
please.
Eight.
Oh, God, no. I'll quit.
We have to do it. Rue McClanahan's in the first one.
Oh, my God. The first one's palatable, but the rest...
Meshuggah Nuts? You don't like Meshuggah Nuns? Meshuggah Nuns?
No. No. No.
It's the Hanukkah one?
I figured as much, yes.
Shall we rank?
Huh?
Shall we?
Oh my God.
Yeah, I've got
it.
Holy shit. I'm ready to go.
Okay. Yes, dude.
Yes, we should. I'm going to make my list real quick. It'll take 5 seconds. CJ, why don't you start? But first, I want to hear my stinger.
Bailey loves ranking shit.
Okay. Six.
I love ranking shit.
Six. Sound of Music. Five. Peter Pan.
Okay.
Four and three are a little interchangeable for me.
Okay.
The Wiz and Hairspray.
Okay.
Two. Grease. One. Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes. That list is so incorrect.
Wow. Wow.
Well, you're both wrong. I know what's about to happen, and we're going to get into it. I love you both before I do.
Okay.
You want me to start? You want me to do this?
Yeah.
Okay. Number six is Peter Pan. Sound of Music is number five.
Okay.
The Wiz is number four.
Okay.
Grease is number three.
Okay.
By a distance. Then Hairspray. Then JC Superstar.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to say six Sound of Music, five Peter Pan, four The Wiz, three Hairspray, two. I think it's exactly CJ's list. Two Grease, one Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
I think I prefer the filming of Grease to Hairspray, because again, Hairspray is trying to do what the other ones did, where it's trying to be theater and it just isn't. But I do like the way that like Welcome to the 60s happened and I prefer different numbers from Hairspray than I do from Grease, and I think the performances of Hairspray are a little cleaner than Grease. But Jesse J, Boyz II Men, and like sort of the overall like nostalgia fest that Grease is what puts it over for me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know that it's better.
Yeah. I get you. Yeah.
But Jesus Christ Superstar, we all agree. I mean, that's the best one.
Yes. By miles.
By miles.
Well, Peter Pan and Sound of Music now.
They just seem to suck now in retrospect.
Exactly. I was about to say, like, I can't even remember anything good about them.
Peter Pan, I liked. The dancers were fun. They were great.
They were fun.
Yeah.
Oh, I that's like right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I think, that's true. The choreo of Peter Pan was fun. Sound of Music was bumpy. Audra McDonald sang her dick off in that one, though. That was good.
Yeah, but she's only got that one fucking song.
Yeah, and J-Hud in Hairspray is, like, you know, maybe one of the best performances of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the Jesus Christ Superstar crew. And then The Wiz had some good performances, some really solid performances.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It just was, Shanice, that was really badly shot.
It was.
That was really, it was just sort dark. Ill-considered. And it was kind of like just trying to shoot a proscenium performance.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
It looked like a soap opera. So did Hairspray, though. Hairspray kind of looked like a soap opera, where I was like, can we turn the lights on? It feels dark in here. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And then we get back to the whole discussion that we had from the beginning was, how do you shoot this? And some of them look like soap opera sort of aesthetic. Some of them look like sitcoms. Some of them were trying to shoot something. I thought that's what the most impressive thing about JC Superstar was we're going to present a very theatrical thing, and we're going to figure out how to shoot it in a very, very smart way.
Yeah.
And it just made it so much more provocative and visually interesting. I think that was my biggest criticism of Grease, was that it just wasn't visually interesting in the way that Hairspray was for me. But
I get that.
I dig.
Do you have anything to defend in there, Siege? Do you feel good about it?
Yeah, I feel good about it.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should get the out of here then.
Yeah.
I love you guys.
Sick of this shit.
Yeah.
It's been a long month, and I know it was a tense month for a lot of people, and a lot of good things happen and a lot of bad things happen. Fucking Scott won
yes.
Basically won Fringe.
Yes. Best two-person show.
I don't know how to say that differently. Yeah, he won Best Two-Person Show and then was nominated for Top of Fringe and won Best of Broadwater for a show he produced, directed, started. I mean, that's a shitty way to put it, because you didn't technically direct it, but you kind of directed it.
We staged it together. It was very much an exercise that we thought that at Fringe we could try and pull off. Like, because we had had a director attached, a really nice, cool guy, but he wanted money, and then there was scheduling stuff because of money, and we were like, let's just go into a room and see if we can pull this off. And so,
well, y'all fucking did.
You fucking pulled it, and it came off.
And thanks for all of your support along the way. And fucking Raise Your Hand from the Dead, nominated for Best Comedy.
That felt pretty good.
The CJ and I produced and acted in. And then Bailey got nominated for the fucking Best Cabaret. And I loved School for Love.
It was a good
I really did. I gave Pam a lot of shit because of the Greatest Showman medley at the end. But but it was a fucking great time. I had a smile on my face the whole fucking hour. So
Yeah, it was a good time. Five really incredible singers. We've been offered an extension. I don't think we'll take it, but we'll see.
Yeah.
And then I shouted out a few shows last episode, and I ended up talking about an episode or a show that I really hated. And then I found out that the writer might reach out to me because he's mad he didn't get our award. And I'm saying that out loud on the podcast. I'm going to send him my venomous review. Okay. Do we want to spotlight any LA theater?
I got one thing.
Okay, let's do it.
I got some.
LA Spotlight.
Same as last week. You Can't Disappear in Studio City. It's going with Animoia Films Saturdays and Sundays at 8 at Three Line Studio. It's opening July 8th and closing August 6th.
Ooh. Y'all. Scott?
I'll just give a quick shout out. We're doing one final performance of If I'm Good on July the 6th at 7 p.m. at the Broadwater Black Box. Tickets are on sale. Look up If I'm Good at thehollywoodfringe.org and come on out and see it one last time.
I don't think I have anything right now that I can think of. Oh, they're doing the Chekhov Project.
at South Pasadena Rep, where they have they're doing Cherry Orchard and The Seagull with the same cast in Rep. And our good friend Keela Packett is in it.
Oh.
He's in both. And they all, like, switch around parts and stuff. Like, ooh, I think they all... Yeah, it's kind of difficult. And then also friend of the pod, Alessandra Manon, who was in Gifted that I produced at Sacred Fools years ago. She is in it as well, but as an understudy. But she's going on for a few performances in the next couple weeks. So check that out. And then that's all. That's all we got. Thank you. Thank you for joining us for the end of an era, the end of the NBC Live musical miniseries. I got to find something else to cover. So join us next week for, I guess it's a Scott's pick. Scott, what'd you decide?
I think we're going to watch The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover.
Wow.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow. Bold.
There's
bold.
A lot. It's bold. CJ hasn't seen it. It's not Jodorowsky level weird, but it's weird. And
it is weird.
But it's Helen Mirren.
Like
it's
theater weird, though.
Yeah. All right. You know, it's,
Is it Michael Gambon in it?
Michael Gambon's a motherfucker in it. Yeah. He's great.
Yeah.
And then there's
solid performances all around.
There's like a whole generation of actors who make their debut in it. Tim Roth's in it, his first movie. And
Stop it.
Yeah. It's fun. We'll get to talk careers. That'll be really fun because there's so many cool people in it. And then after that, we were, and maybe this will change. I don't know. Reach out if you have feelings about it. We were about to cover Larissa Fast Horse.
Yeah.
Larissa Fast Horse, we were going to have on the podcast. It was going to be amazing. Since the Mark Taper is no longer producing her show, CTG is not, Center Theater Group is no longer producing her show. We are trying to decide, like, do we, well, we lost the interview until next year, basically.
Right.
So, which is fine. But do we cover Larissa? Do we keep going with, do we do our next playwright? What do we do? I don't know. So did we decide?
Literally, I have changed my mind four times since you and I had a conversation.
That's me too.
Because I feel like in the wake of what happened at CTG, and given who she is and who she's representing, I think it would be important to amplify her work.
Agreed.
And talk about her work. At the same time, I don't want to seem disrespectful because of the bullshit that just happened. And if we look like we're being exploitative at all, but, you know, taking advantage of it. But we had planned it well before the announcement. And
that's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we got the interview a long time ago, and we just only have been announcing it for the past few weeks. But I think, what's your take, Siege?
I go back and forth on it, for sure. Because it would be cool to cover her stuff when and if her show comes back next year.
And her show could come back before then to another theater. We never know, you know. And so part of me kind of feels like maybe we talk to Maddox, who is going to be our guest for those episodes, and just see what they say and see if there's, you know, if Maddox is like, let's wait, that'd be so much more fun, then maybe we'll do that. But if that's the case, then we might just hop back into another round of our picks, which would be CJ. So CJ, start thinking about what you want to do.
Yeah, yeah, I will.
But then I think next is Martin McDonagh after that.
Yeah.
So we'll hop into him if we don't do Larissa.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Let's think about it. Yeah, and get some feedback from some folks. And...
Yeah.
And then after Martin McDonagh is a Theater Nightmares 2 episode. I don't know why we chose that, but we're doing that.
So much fun.
And then three Euripides episodes.
All right.
Euripides. Yes. Yeah.
And then we're going to start our Fringe winner miniseries, which was Roddy Villegas, who we should have actually probably shouted out at the beginning of this episode.
Oh, what are we thinking? We kind of farted,
Yeah, we totally did. Our Playwright Award winner was Roddy Villegas, who was wrote Infierno this year, a phenomenal piece. And we nominated five really phenomenal pieces, so it was a tough. We actually debated the winner, pretty hardcore.
Yeah,
so
we had to have across the street. Let's have a cigarette. Let's talk this out.
Yeah, someone even at one point came up and was like, "Hey, you guys, can I hang out?" And we were like, "No,
no, we need to ask you to step across the street.
Go
please
away.
Go back."
Yeah. But that was great. I'm glad we got through it. And then just because I'm listening, I'm going to tell you who's after that. Then it's Ntozake Shange.
Oh, yes.
And then it's Shakespeare.
Yes.
Problem Plays. Finally.
Problem Plays this
Problem
year.
Plays. Problem Plays. Problem Plays. And I think we'll probably have Kevin on again because Kevin was a great guest for that.
He was a fucking delight.
Yeah, Kevin. Yeah, he was great. It was great running into him and Kate the other night.
We'll get Kevin Shuey on the podcast. So, and then for one of my picks coming up, I'm going to get Kate on because Kate's awesome too. You guys need to meet Kate on the podcast. Okay, y'all. Thank you for joining us. Bye. See you.
Do y'all have questions or comments? Please reach out to us via Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or email. Did I say that? Yeah, yeah. Scott.
You're drunk. Big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. He writes all of our stingers, and he's just a wonderful fucking human being. It was great to see him at Fringe again this year. So thank you, Ryan, for all that you do. And then finally to the great award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
That's right. It's true. Yes. We love you, Carol. We love you, Harold Pinta.
Pinta. Fly high, Pinta.
We love you, Kushner.
That's what I think Kushner sounds like. I'm Tony Kushner.
I love Tony Kushner.
I'm Tony Kushner, and that's mean. I bet he's a great guy. I just think everyone we've covered should have a voice on the pod. But
yeah.
Sure, we should break them all down. Yeah.
Annie Baker just speaks like this.
Yes.
Annie, I'm Annie.
Just very close. Very NPR. NPR.
Welcome to Theater, the Annie Baker podcast. And then Paula Vogel just screams at us.
Yeah.
Okay. Should we get out of here?
Yeah.
Let's get out.
All right. Yeah. Everyone tells you that the minute you get married, every other woman in the world suddenly finds you attractive. Well, that's not true. It only affects the kind of women you always wanted to sleep with, but they wouldn't give you the time of day before, and now they're bringing down your door and falling on their knees, or at least that's what they feel like, because it cannot touch them. In fact, you can't even look at them. Close your eyes, except you're sitting there eating a corned beef sandwich, and all of a sudden this pair of breasts walks by and smiles at you, and you're like, that's not fair. But in a perfect world, a miracle would happen, and every other girl would fly away, and it would be me and CJ, and nothing else would matter, but it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. I got my Scott, and it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's what I wanted, and it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's not a problem. It's just a challenge. It's a challenge to resist temptation.
Norbert Leo Butts, y'all.
And I'll be.
Later, everybody.
The theater, the theater.
Hang out, Louie!
Theater, theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater, theater.
I'm sorry, y'all. I just got to blow my nose real fast. Sorry.
Oh, gross. Lord. We're ready to go. We're recording this.
Disgusting.
I'm sorry.
I'm putting this at the end of the episode.